Okay, so Anthony, I know that you went to this region looking for to make a film about birth defects originally, and then you came across this very complex and intense situation that was not what you expected.
Yeah, the film actually evolved across many lines. Originally, it was a film about the this nuclear bomb city of Kurchatov, and then everyone was saying, well, why don't you make a film about the birth defects? It's the big problem here. So I said, okay, well, where are the birth defects? And they said, well, just go out to the villages, you'll find people. And so literally we went on what my fixer christened a monster hunt. We went out in a four-wheel drive, just driving around the area, and we found a lot of families who had deformed members, deformed children, and they were trying to hide them away from the rest of society because of the shame the Kazakhs feel. And I got back to the city of St. Palatinsk and was really shocked about the attitude that people had there. Most of all, the doctor, who at that point in time, which was like 4 years ago, was the head of the regional health service. And he was telling me that his plan was to introduce genetic passports because it was the only way they could solve the very high rate of birth defects they have in the most affected villages. And so really I returned to England and thought about it, and the film then became a story about what it's like to be pregnant in that area, because it must be, I thought it must be terrifying. And so I went back, and the doctor turned out to moved himself to the maternity clinic so he could be closer to his sort of pet project, and that's when the story really started.
So when I saw him getting, he often came across as being quite callous and a bit cold, really, towards things. But when I saw him, I thought of someone who actually wanted to save kids from having a really troublesome, painful, awkward life in this already awkward environment. And I didn't know where you sat. The film is, its beauty is it opens up to interpretation as to what you want to feel about the situation. Are you, after walking in and seeing this, are you pro nuclear or anti-nuclear, like
pro-nuclear, anti-nuclear, pro-life, against choice?
I mean, there's pro-life, there's anti-life, but I want to know how you feel about the nuclear issue, because I saw him struggling as well, and everyone in the film struggles. I want to know what your take is on this.
What is the audience's take on it? Because I am pro-nuclear, very
he is
pro-nuclear.
But one man.
Is everybody here pro against nuclear power?
I'd say until we could find a better alternative, then yeah.
There's too many unanswered questions.
I'm just wondering, as one of the anti-nuclear weapons, how fair your portrayal is. I mean, you show a really, it comes across as a brutally callous experiment, and I'm sure that that's what shocks people. But it seems to me that you lack any of the, can I put it, the scientific perspective. What one would like to know is whether there has actually been any proper study. Because if we consider the evidence that there is available about the after effects of the Chernobyl disaster, most of the evidence that comes from the region, which I know is disputed by the international community, but that is pro-nuclear, shows that there have been hundreds of thousands of deaths.
Okay, can I interrupt you there, because this is a topic that comes up again and again. The serious scientists that have looked at Chernobyl and Hiroshima, have come back with no evidence whatsoever, okay? Right? These are not people who are bought by nuclear lobbies and so on, okay? They found no evidence that radiation causes genetic effects down the line. And don't you think that me as a filmmaker, okay, that went there, okay, and invested a lot of my own personal time and everything like that into this project, would it doesn't work in my favour. Do you understand? If the problems that they have out in that region is not from nuclear power. Do you understand? Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm making a film about a woman who everyone says is deformed from radiation. Well, it turns out that her bloody mother was born before the first bomb went off. Okay? Right. Second thing is the local scientists there are absolutely convinced that it's due to, that their problems are due to radiation. But nobody else is saying that that's true. The only person is Yuri Dubrova in Leicester University, who studied on mice, and that was one big radiation shot. Right now, there is fridges of blood. All right. Now, the truth is, I can't answer your question. Okay. All right.
Because what you are trying to put forward is assertions, and I'm afraid that there is plenty of contrary evidence around. To show the impacts of radiation, both following Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but certainly following Chernobyl. And I would like to draw your attention to the fact that we are still finding defects and long-term consequences within the regions affected by the fallout from Chernobyl.
Can you quote that evidence? You mentioned the hundreds of thousands. Where is that evidence?
That evidence is published in what I will acknowledge to you, United Nations services refuse to admit.
This is a very particular argument here about where evidence comes from.
It is the evidence that is available within the region and which is published and which is verified.
One issue with the film is that no one has actually carried out this investigation in the area.
Okay.
In particular.
I don't know about the Kazakhstan area. What I'm saying is that if you are asserting that...
I'm quoting.
You appear to be asserting that the defects that are claimed within that region, and I know nothing about this particular test area, I find the whole thing exceedingly disturbing, actually, when one views the attitudes...
Intrusion into the life of those.
The Soviets tested weapons on people. Okay, we now have the results. Okay, that's what the Soviets did. They tested the weapons on people. We now have the results, and the results seem to are ambiguous because nobody's actually done the research on it. Okay, that area nobody knows about. All right, everybody knows about Chernobyl and so on, but nobody knows about this area where you can actually find. If we were to do the research, like and actually, you know, then we can help solve this sort of disagreement that we have between you and me. Yeah, okay, because we can. There are literally, I saw them freezers of blood that they took from all the generations down, from people who were born in the 20s to people who have been born now, same generation, all the way down. If you were to sequence that genome, those genomes, you would be able to find commonalities, like did the radiation strike some bit of DNA and then that got carried down? You'd be able to find it out, but nobody's done the research. In fact, the area is so underfunded that the scientist that you saw doesn't even have enough money to get a decent freezer. It should be kept in liquid nitrogen. It's been kept in some other gas. And so as a result of this freezer problem, their blood is going to go off because it's been kept at too warm a temperature. That's how underfunded the area is. And so until we get the funding, we can't solve this question. That's my
question.
but it's not so much a question, just some observations, really. I think there's a big difference between, say, you going visiting the area and being exposed to the radiation, and the people that are living there, that seem to eat a lot of sheep, that graze on the grass, they're going to be ingesting radioactive particles, and once kind of radioactive particles are in your body, and acting as emitters in your body, that's a whole different ball game from just like being exposed to, say, an X-ray or something, which is kind of the equivalent to what you had. So that's one thing. The second thing, these experiments haven't ended. The defects in kind of birth defects from in Fallujah are way beyond Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It looks as if the amount of kind of radioactive material used in Fallujah was far greater than kind of the effect in. It's 9 days after the shock and awe in 2003, the radiation was detected at Aldermaston from all the depleted uranium, and all these wars of terror are nuclear wars. There's huge amounts of depleted uranium being used, and it's the experiment is ongoing. And I mean, my understanding is that background radiation levels now, pretty much everywhere in the world, kind of 5-6 times what they were before all the nuclear testing started in the 50s. This is a big planetary experiment that we're doing.
Okay, I've got to come in because I've just got to bust some of these myths, okay? The radiation level, if I was to pull out a Geiger counter, it would show something about 15. Right? If I was to take a plane, I did it, all right? You will measure about 200 to 300 microvolt gains, okay? All right, that's the same radiation on the crater, by the way. All right, in winter, in summer, the radiation is more like 3,000 or 4,000, which is a lot more dangerous. But definitely, when I was on that crater in the winter, I was being exposed to no more than sitting on a jumbo jet, right, in the air. All right, the question that you pose about the ingesting the radiation, if it gets in your, if you swallow strontium or cesium, the radioactive versions, they can replicate themselves as blood, as protein, or lodge in your bones. But there isn't much of it about, because there has the most of the radiation that's deposited there is from a long time ago, and it's decayed, it's blown away. That is the people grazing the cattle near the craters are idiots, because you're right, they're going to get problems, right? But the radiation does fall off very soon by. So biblicals, the people they're with, the idiots, because they're eating the ingested the bad meat. But most of the other people, like in St. Palatinsk, aren't. The point about the background radiation in the world being 4 or 5 times higher than it was before is just, that's just not true. I mean, This isn't that I have some kind of attitude against radiation. It's just that I've come at it from one perspective. That this was a everybody there is telling you that it's from the radiation. That da 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 da. Okay, and then you look and you critically look at what you don't trust what people tell you ever. Right? Unless you're a fool, you look at what people say and then you look at the evidence for and against. And I've been through this process 3 or 4 years now. What I'm telling you is just from my own experience. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that that you've got to balance the arguments. And I know that that film, the shocking images, and it's very easy to be taken in by the power of suggestion. But part of the reason that I constructed the film the way I did was because to show that, yes, you can be taken in by these images, what they're saying, and it's very, very, very difficult to combat it against. That's why I put those cards in there. It's like, whoa, hang on a bit. What is objective scientific opinion saying about this? And you find that the two are often really, night and day. I mean, look at the war on terror. Everybody was convinced that it was due to, evil Muslims want to stop our freedoms, but we now know that the picture is much more nuanced than that, and this is no different. That's my personal take on this.
I was just slightly curious. You said the lack of sort of scientific study in the area. If the nukes were dropped for scientific research by the Soviet Union, I'm just wondering why the scientific study hasn't continued. As the situation sort of arose because of scientific study?
Well, I mean, they're these people that were kind of roped into it to be the doctors are still doing it. One of the main reasons is that so that they can make the whole experiment make some kind of sense. It's a little bit like the kind of experiments that Mengele did on by immersing people in freezing water to see how long they survived. I mean, people still use that data for search and rescue in seas, and they want to do the same. You know, the what's done is done, and they're trying to do the very best they can, but there's no money for it, so they're working on very, very little money. People just aren't interested anymore. The world has moved on.
On the international stage, you think there might be enough interest to sort of do those studies?
That's why I made the film.
Yeah. So, is there a possibility, if we're getting that, it seems the scientific community are, if say science is objective, but in the international stage, things are pretty much pro-nuclear then. I'm just wondering whether or not it's slightly not in their interest to discover it.
You can posit these kind of conspiracy theories. I mean, I don't know if they're true or not. I generally go on the version that the simplest version of the events is generally the...
It's basically
not
really conspiracy, it's just, lack of funding.
Well, yeah, selective funding for one project versus another.
In response to the gentleman here,
yeah.
It is perfectly scandalous that there has been no properly financed and continuous research, which there should have been. And one of the reasons for this...
Whereabouts in that area?
I'm actually talking about most of the radiological information that there is. There are plenty of scientists around. Ian Fairley, I will quote, as one, but there are plenty of scientists who have conducted quite detailed research, statistical research, into the impacts of radiation, low-level radiation, and the various ways in which radiation is ingested on human health, including birth defects, thyroid cancers, increases in cancers around the place. But what is scandalous is that following, for instance, Chernobyl, the international community did not continue the monitoring. The monitoring was done within the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union's data demonstrates quite clearly that there were significant deaths, but that we do not have available to us all the time. And I think one of the things that we have to do, I don't know whether anybody was reading the piece in The Guardian at the end of last week, about the collusion between, for instance, our government in the UK and
Japan.
The international nuclear industry, which decided that the best way to cope with the Fukushima disaster would be to suppress as much of the evidence as possible and try to keep the level of alarm down. I would say that the disaster in Fukushima is still not over. We have molten cores within the nuclear power plants there, and nobody has a clue what to do with it. Nor do we know what to do with the radioactive waste, which is also highly dangerous.
Okay, well, how do you propose we're heading into a debate now. I mean, I don't know if...
I would like to keep questions connected to the actual film, things about that are happening in the film. What you're talking about, things that can't be proven right now and can't be discussed in such detail. But
sort of challenging the assertions that what other people...
Okay, let's just ask this guy's question here.
Yeah, what I think is most significant is that the mother had this defect, and she was born before the nuclear tests. So this indicates that these particular things that people suffer from are not primarily due to the nuclear testing.
I believe it was her mother was born before the test.
Her mother was born 3 months before the test.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And almost everybody is taken in by the fact that they think the mother is from the nuclear testing.
Yeah.
And that's just the power of suggestion.
Another small point I'd like to make, and that is about depleted uranium. Depleted uranium is non-radioactive uranium, and so can't be guilty of irradiating people. However, chemically, it may well be very dangerous. I don't know, but some of these heavy metals are exceedingly dangerous.
You're absolutely right, and this is the thing. I don't know the depleted uranium physics, but I assume you're right. There are so many other toxins and carcinogens around that this cinema is lit by a combination of coal, nuclear, and gas that burns off far away. And these create global warming. They create pollutants and all other kinds of stuff that go around and kill us. It's been estimated that by scientists that coal, for every nuclear death, there's 4,000 coal-related deaths, and that's not including, people generations down the line. There is no right form of energy.
I was going to ask, obviously the area did seem quite biased towards it being nuclear as well, but did you, in your own study, did you come across any other reason why the
Many reasons. I tried to show them there that they're obsessed to protect from the non-existent radiation that's there. They got to have vodka. They only walk onto that. You saw that there's a scene where he's by the farm. That's 4 kilometres from this massive crater. Right, the radiation shows 15. Right, that's 15 as in here. He walks over to the fence. It's 30. Right, he goes to the crater. It's 200, 300. All right, so it's kind of. How often is he on the crater? Okay, only when he's herding his cattle every so often. Most of the time, it's normal, and so even that guy, okay, he's only and when he's on the crater in winter, he's only getting what you get on a jumbo jet flying to Spain. Right? So it's not a lot, but yeah, he smokes 30, 40 cigarettes a day. I bet you that's more harmful than the radiation. Right? And then he has a limited diet. It also consists of sheep meat, right? Not much veg. I took vitamin C tablets and other tablets there to Bibigol and other pregnant women. But did they know what they did? No. Right? The level of ignorance was outstanding. And so on. There are a lot of other reasons that people there are having problems. Saying all that is a genuine conundrum, because in that village there's 1 in 20 birth defects over the last 15 years, and the other villages I've been to in Kazakhstan, because I lived there for several years, right, also have what I told you, smoking, endemic drinking, and they don't have the birth defects. There is something going on, there's something fishy there.
Has there been an increase since?
There's an anecdote. Anecdotally, the nurses say there's been an increase, but that's not scientifically proven. All of this points to the fact that we don't know enough, and the lady in blue is absolutely right that it is scandalous that we don't do the research there. Until we do the research, we really cannot say one thing or the other. But we must be cautious about what we do say, not leap into massive conclusions, but we must send some scientists there to research this.
That's I think the worry is if we're turning to renewable energy sources, if we rush into nuclear energy without doing proper research into it, then it is dangerous if we don't have the scientific evidence before.
But it's dangerous if we stay with coal, isn't it?
Yeah. There are alternatives, and one of the problems about if people are going to go into the nuclear energy debate rather than the impacts of, I think that was testing nuclear weapons rather than talking about nuclear energy, but if you're going to go into the nuclear energy debate, the nuclear energy is A, not carbon free, is a B, not a sustainable resource,
sure,
will be running out of uranium, and C, exceedingly expensive, and is only viable as long as we put huge subsidies into it, which we take away from renewable energy.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, I want to keep things.
We can carry this on in the bar.
In the bar. I have two things I want to say. Firstly, is about how your relationship with the mother changed as you arrived and got to know her and her situation representing an entire community. How you got to know her, how you got to get her trust, how you got to, how it changed with her as she became pregnant or whatnot.
Okay, as I said, you know, we went on my fixer christened a monster hunt, and we weren't the only ones out there doing that. The CNN, BBC, they'd all sent correspondents over there over the last 10, 15 years, looking for, you know, where all the radioactive mutants, they were saying. And there were only so many out there. And unfortunately, Bibigol's mother was among them. And, we discovered them by accident. And so it turned up, they're, hey, can I film you and your daughter? And it was like, the Serik was there. He said, fuck off, you know, get some vodka. And then we'll talk. And it was like, okay. So we it was getting late, so we drove off to get some vodka from the shop, which is like 20 kilometres there, back with the vodka. Okay. We didn't actually make it back there because we ran out of petrol. We didn't have enough petrol to make it all the way back to town. It was 300 kilometres back to St. It was 100 kilometres back to St. Latins. So anyway, next year we return, okay, and we thought, let's do things a little more cleverly this time. So I found out who the doctor was of Biken, and the doctor came up with me to see her, made an introduction, and then they were very, very wary. There was no vodka. They were very, very wary about being filmed because they felt they'd been exploited by filmmakers in the past who just wanted to come in and get the monster shots and go. Mm. And I was determined not to do that, okay? Because the reason I'm using the word monster is because that's exactly what they perceive other people to be there for. There have been countless sort of Japanese scientists turning up treating them like aliens. They're like, what one person, he said to me, you're the first person who's actually like sitting with us, drinking our tea, and isn't scared to death that we're all radioactive and going to contaminate you somehow. And I just sort of, you know, it's very, very difficult because I really didn't, you know, there is, in the summer there's a lot of dust, and I know that dust has got plutonium in. Now, the plutonium was, you know, it's low dose. It's a bit like being in a smoggy city, okay? It's there and it's going to harm you for the rest of your life, possibly, just like any other toxin can. But it's bloody, because what you don't know frightens you the most, yeah? Mm. And so I was really frightened being in the car. And yet I couldn't turn up and speak to these people with the gap, you know, with a mask on my face. Right? I'm serious, I had like bottled water. I was drinking the tea as little as possible, running out back and hydrating on the bottled water. Right? And it was just utter madness. And my fixer was just like going spare. And so, you know, I got rid of the fixer and got one who wasn't so frightened. And she was very cool. And you know, we just hung out with them, and I'm sure it wasn't doing our health, you know, the power of good. But in the end, we made friends that way, and I bought them loads of sheep as well. But, you know,
that always helps.
Money's good.
You were worried about your own health there when you were convinced earlier that they're not necessarily any effects. But my concern is the way you treated that family. I felt very uncomfortable about that. I felt that, I can see the reasons you used them, but I felt that you treated the young woman with a considerable lack of dignity. I know she was in the whole hospital. Maybe your intention was to show how bad the treatment is. I don't know, but I felt very uncomfortable as a filmmaker. You would even want to intrude like that.
I disagree.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I felt.
I also
felt that I could have shown you, when I worked in London docks in the 1960s, I could have shown you people there with birth defects, and we wouldn't have shown them in that way. We'd learnt to use slightly different language. And, you know, I didn't want to be there, and which is partly, I know what you were trying to show.
I think the point was to show the way that they perceive themselves, as opposed to, I mean, in terms of what the people who live there who don't have the defect, who see them as. I don't think they was trying to, like you say, make her feel less dignified or anything like that. I think it was just to prove a point of
And that is what I think this part of it that did just make a mistake. I think it intruded too much.
I think it is a matter of opinion.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, I wanted to make a film that was not, you know, our perceptions of who they are and what their troubles are from, but from you know, I wanted them to speak, and yeah, that does mean sort of filming some uncomfortable situations, you know. But I hope that they benefited from it in some form. I mean. You know, I bought her some sheep for having her legs open while I filmed her giving birth. I mean, I don't know what kind of recompense that is, but I mean, I did try to do something. But the idea was that rather than it being Western talking heads, Western activists, all the rest of it talking about their situation, well, why not? Let's see it from their point of view, and that's what the film is.
We have time for one more question.
Yeah. I was just curious, when the baby was giving birth and it turned out the baby was healthy, Ashokan, the doctor seemed very upset and cross.
Oh, he's very disappointed.
More of a cross. I think it seems more like, I mean, at the beginning he seems like definitely wants to help, but it seemed to me like he more has an obsession to be right than... I think he probably started off wanting to help, but it seems to have turned to a point where now he just wanted to be right, so he could say, "Ha, I was right all along." And he seemed very disappointed that the baby was fine.
The guy really is straight out of a science fiction tale. I mean, he's a he's not got the best bedside manners, and he's a doctor, and he's become slightly megalomaniacal in his role as playing God and with his pet solutions. I think there was genuine disappointment that he was proved wrong, because he'd stuck the risk of her having Down, the baby being born with Downs, at 2/3, and he knew I was filming it, so he was kind of like, wanted to be proved right, because in his opinion, and I was with him for most of it, you know, Bibi Gull was playing... if the doctor's playing God, or Bibi Gull's playing God with this child that's in her, if she's not, the doctors have told her that there's a really high risk. She's not taking her vitamins and all that, and she still wants to have the kid anyway. And it's not like a child being born with Down syndrome in the UK, where it has a very good chance of a healthy, happy life. Out there, they're just, you know, if the kid's not normal, off to the orphanage. The orphanage is part of pants. You wouldn't want to be born as a kid there. Right? Literally, like, all the kids I was filming with, I think most of them are dead. Right? And that's 4 years ago. It's not a happy place. So from the doctor's point of view, he's really trying to, you know, help. That's why he was so keen to be filmed, because he saw in, you know, the film a vehicle to try to, you know, find some kind of solution to the problem of these children being born with problems that are not accepted by society and can't live a proper life in society. So, you know, he's trying to do the right thing, but
in your view,
which
society can be more accepting and more supportive?
But he thinks he's doing his own thing.
Yeah. Could I ask you one technical question, which is, during the film, you indicate when the conversation, from time to time, you indicate when the conversation is in Russian and when it is in Kazakh. Do you speak both languages?
I speak Russian, but not Kazakh.
So you had an interpreter?
I had an interpreter standing right behind me.
I'm sure they were very professional about it.
No, it was just... I'm just a little bit confused about the cutting then, I think.
It was very simple.
Because there were moments when the doctor was saying one thing in Russian and then another thing in Kazakh.
Let me explain how it worked. So Bibi Gull is going in for her test. Okay, I'm with her in the car. We arrive. She sits down on the chair, because she's got to get her papers done. doctor's faffing about. All right, she's looking increasingly more nervous. You know, I tell the doctor, you know, you know, sort her nervousness out. He says, what, like the hideous one over there? And then, you know, he gives the papers to his secretary. Oh, she trots off to have these various tests, including an ultrasound. And then they're telling her she's got to get the Down syndrome test. Doctor walks in. Oh, now, look at this patient here. She's got a problem. She should be tested and all this stuff right in front of her. You know, like in one of these medical dramas, you know, where doctors are doing their rounds and pointing out the ones with the various diseases. And literally, he did it right in front of me. And all we did was just cut out the spare bits in between.
I found his behaviour in that scene, sort of, he antagonised himself quite a lot there, and from that point on in the film, because of that, like, it seemed quite manipulative when we're swapping between languages, I suppose, to you as well. But just when he was talking to her and put his hand flat on her shoulder, and when she was already feeling quite uncomfortable, I think from that point on, I think he antagonised himself.
Somebody else knows.
Same in this country 100 years ago.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Patronising doctors, and okay, they've changed, but it's not reasonable to expect them to be exactly the same as us in this regard, especially in a country like.
We're kind of out of time, folks. So let's.
We can
shout outside, folks. So thanks very much to Nancy for bringing
the pleasure. We're going to have drinks in the bar. So
let's talk in the bar. Thanks a lot.